Yeah, so we're working out of Rafa at the moment, and about an hour ago we had quite a close explosion nearby to our offices here. So it was quite recent, so I don't know too much about it, but certainly since I've been here, that's one of the closest situations that we've had. But it just goes to show that 7 months almost into this war, it's still very, very dangerous wherever you are, and it's very active, and a lot of people are in great danger every day.
You recently visited several parts of Gaza, and let's start with your visit to Jabalia in the north. You've shared videos about the devastation that you've seen while driving to the north. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so over the last couple of days, I've been to Gaza City and Jabalia camp, and also in Khan Yunis. It's my first experience in the Gaza Strip since the war began. I used to know the Gaza Strip quite well. I've worked with UNRWA and I've worked in the region for the last 4 years. So it's my first time being here since the war began, and it's just unbelievable to see Gaza City. That was the first place that I have been, and we went on mission with UNRWA and WFP, a joint mission to Jabalia camp. The agencies are working very closely in the north, really trying to expand the food distribution together up there. But the drive up was absolutely shocking for me. Also, on a personal note, just this city that I've known, you know, for these years, and seeing everything around you just completely flattened. It didn't feel real seeing out of every single window in the car. As far as you could see, was just destruction. There were homes, visibly homes, because you could see where they were still standing. There were walls missing, and you could see into the living rooms, into the dining rooms, almost like these moments that used to be there and are no longer. That it's like there was life there. You can very clearly see life there, pictures on the wall, clothes kind of around the room, but there's nobody in there. There was absolutely nobody in anywhere just outside the checkpoint and going into that early drive through Gaza City. So it was very haunting, really. Just a shocking experience to see how much destruction there is, and that's just the buildings that were standing. Everything else around, you know, you look to the left, things are flattened. You look to the right, things are flattened. Really, as far as you could see, and you referenced the video I took. I was sitting in the front of the car. Everywhere I was looking with the phone and the video, you know, you look to the left, there's destruction. You look in front, there's destruction. You look to the right, and there's destruction. Your mind can't even process that it's real to see that much devastation in front of you. So it was a really, really difficult experience to see people still living there. Very few people were at that kind of crossing area. That's just when you go into the north of Gaza. But then as you enter Jabalia, the markets kind of pick up, and you see more people around. The really good news from our trip to Jabalia is it appears that within the last few weeks, there's been a lot more commercial food on the market. So there were a lot more people at the markets. My colleagues who have been here a lot longer than I have were explaining that 2 or 3 weeks ago, when they were in Jabalia, it was a very different place. People were very, very hungry, very scared. There was not a lot available in the market. There was not a lot of food available. Whereas when we went this weekend, it was very positive to see that that had somewhat shifted. You know, the agencies are going to continue to work together, UNRWA and WFP, to make sure that people in the north do have the food that they need after all of this time without this food.
So, was UNRWA able to provide any assistance during this trip to Jabalia?
So the trip was more of an assessment. It was to review the facilities that UNRWA has. A lot of the facilities we have been damaged during this war. It's 165 facilities across the Gaza Strip that have been attacked or damaged. So we really need some space and some warehouse and distribution areas that we can offload the food and then distribute to the community. So this trip in particular was an assessment of those facilities to see where we could restore, where we could, you know, start using again. And some of the facilities we visited, you know, there was one warehouse that had bullet holes throughout the roof, and some of them had walls missing. So they really are in a very bad way, and they've been very severely damaged. But that was the kind of intent of this visit. And we also visited our colleagues. I was with the director of UNRWA Affairs in Gaza, Scott Anderson, and he was talking to and meeting with our colleagues in the north in Jabalia who have been running the health services throughout the whole duration of the war. So we have a group of incredible colleagues who have still been going to work every day. They themselves have displaced. I spoke to some of the women in the group, and it's devastating. They've all lost something. Many of them have lost more than you can imagine. And they talk about, they have homes now without walls that they're still living in. They really have gone a very long time without food. They discuss the struggles they've had with going to work and serving the community and then going home to their children in the evening, trying to put food on the table while they're still at work all the time. So they've really just had a horrific time during this war. And it was very important for us to spend time with them and speak to them and hear their concerns and hear their challenges, because there are still so many challenges for these people in North Gaza.
Do they feel a little safer now?
I don't think anyone feels safe, no, not at all. There was not a feeling of safety. There was a feeling of slight relief that there was more food available. And, even just seeing UNRWA and WFP working together in the north, they were very hopeful for this opportunity that these two organizations will expand the food distribution in the area. But they're tired. They're very tired. They're very scared. They've been through more than we could imagine the last 6.5 months, and they are very scared of what tomorrow brings. They are very scared if more, military action will happen. They're scared if they'll be displaced again. They're scared of the nights. The nighttime, they explain, they get home with their children and how their children feel at home, the way they sleep together and huddle together in fear. There's just no safety here. No one feels safe.
Let's move back to Khan Yunus. Tell us more about that.
So Khan Yunis, yesterday we were on a joint mission. This was UNRWA and UNMAS, which is the UN mine agency. And essentially it was a first assessment mission to sweep the area and assess the area for any potential shrapnel, any potential unexploded ordnance in the UNRWA facilities in Khan Yunis. It was devastating to see the facilities. Each facility that we visited, there was the Khan Yunis Training Center, an UNRWA health clinic, and two schools. I know all of these facilities from before the war, so it was completely devastating to see the condition that they were in now. And the thing that really shocked me the most was it was very evident how quickly people had fled these facilities. So we're talking about four huge UNRWA compounds. Now, this is where, and I'm sure you'll be familiar with the images of tens of thousands of people sheltering within these compounds, whether they were in the classrooms, whether they were sleeping outside in makeshift shelters. There were tens of thousands of people in these UNRWA facilities, and almost overnight, they had to evacuate. There was a Israeli forces warning to evacuate Khan Yunis and evacuate these UNRWA facilities. And walking around these facilities yesterday, there were shoes, children's shoes, not collectively, one here, one there, toothbrushes, hair brushes, clothes, socks, even you could see kind of half-eaten food. And it just seemed that everything had been abandoned very, very quickly. Nobody had the luxury to pack up even what they had there, because these people in our facilities at that time were already displaced. So it's not like they had an abundance of things with them at this point. And yet there was still so much left behind. Some of our colleagues there in Khan Yunis in the training center were sharing their experiences of this situation, saying how, terrified they were then, how terrifying it was for everyone sheltering there. They really had to evacuate within a matter of hours, a lot of people in fear. And it was devastating to see unmarked graves even in the corner of our facility in the Khan Yunis training center. There were some graves for some children. On the wall above one of the children's grave, there was a message from a sister saying, "Marwa, your sister misses you and loves you." It's just, you cannot believe it's a UN facility. You cannot believe that this is a place that people thought they were safe. Walls of the perimeter were completely knocked down, bullet holes throughout every room, almost every classroom. A lot of the external walls had been completely knocked through. There was clear damage to the roof that had come through. So the whole experience in Khan Yunis was devastating, really beyond devastating, just driving between the facilities as well. Very similar to Gaza City, the level of destruction you just couldn't comprehend. Buildings are skeletons, if anything. You know, they're either completely flattened or they're skeletons. And you just cannot believe that people lived here and that life used to be there. It's so far from that now.
I would like to ask you about our colleague Abdullah, the photojournalist who survived the bombardment in the north. I think he was in Al Shifa Hospital, and now he's in Doha for treatment. Could you tell us more about his condition?
Yes, so we had some really good news this week that our colleague and photojournalist Abdallah Al-Haj, he was medically evacuated out of Gaza and he is now in Doha. So we're absolutely thrilled. Everyone at UNRWA is so relieved that he and his family are no longer in Gaza. I saw Abdallah on Tuesday. I went with some colleagues. My colleagues have been visiting him very regularly. And he was in a field hospital just in Rafah, waiting and hoping to be evacuated. He needed some further surgery that wasn't possible in Gaza City due to the facility he was in and the medical supplies that were available. So we're very relieved that he will now be able to receive this treatment. It's been a horrific journey for Abdallah since the bombardments that happened in the north in February, in the end of February. After that, he was taken to Al Shifa Hospital where he initially received treatment. This hospital was then under siege by Israeli forces for 2 weeks, and Abdallah was inside for the whole duration of this siege. We couldn't imagine what Abdallah has been through, and we're all just very relieved and very thankful that he is now getting the treatment that he needs.
Finally, as you mentioned in the beginning of this interview, you said that this is not your first time in Gaza. You've been in the street before. And what comes to your mind when you see all this devastation and reflect back on your previous experiences? And what's your message?
I mean, Gaza to me has always been a wonderful place to work. The colleagues here are some of the best I've ever worked with, not just with UNRWA, but anywhere in the world. I feel so privileged to have these colleagues and friends in my life. And it's just appalling to see the lives that they are now living. I think for everyone, it's like the life ended and then something else has begun. Because the way that my colleagues and my friends here speak about, you know, life before their homes, even just today, my colleague Hussein was showing me the pictures of his apartment and the videos of his new apartment that he was moving into at the beginning of October. He showed me a video of the building today, and it's completely destroyed. This home was in Gaza City, and he's just one of everyone, right? Everyone has the same story where they're now sleeping under plastic sheeting. They're crammed into rooms with all of their family, neighbors, and neighbors. Nobody knows what's coming next. Everybody is visibly tired. You know, I know so many familiar faces here, and I recognize these colleagues and these friends, but they all look so different after the last 6.5 months. It's very hard to explain how drained and you can just see the suffering a lot of people have been through. They've lost a lot of weight collectively, which is a very odd experience to kind of go back to somewhere that you know and see everybody has changed so significantly in what is quite a short amount of time. But they're all wearing this war. They're all so tired from everything that's happened. And I think the biggest problem is they just don't know what tomorrow brings. There's so much fear. For what next? Are we going to be displaced again? What are we going to have to go through tonight? What is tomorrow? There's a lot of fear for their children. You know, these children have been out of school now for almost an entire school year. What are they doing? You know, the young children they speak of, they don't know the ABCs, they don't know the 1, 2, 3s, the basic things that they should have been learning this year, they're now without. And instead of that education, in replacement of that, they have fear of bombardment. They have fear of losing their home. They have fear of losing members of their family. And it's a very, very, very scary and unstable environment to be growing up in when you don't have any kind of stability or hope in the near future. There's a lot of hope for a ceasefire. Every day people talk, is there a ceasefire coming? We can only hope that there is a ceasefire coming. And that's what everyone's hanging on to.